Would you want to talk a little bit about what it's like going to NA meetings, being in a recovery group during the pandemic?
It's changed drastically. What the landscape looks like inside a face-to-face meeting is much different than what many of us have known our entire recoveries. The rooms are set up generally differently. People are trying as best they can to adhere to social distancing. So people have masks on. A little bit harder to hear when people are sharing and talking, but we're doing the best we can. Some meetings are much smaller because they have to be.
So there was already some form of online meeting in starting in 2018.
We use the Zoom platform. Hybrid meetings are held on multiple platforms: GoToMeeting, Zoom, Skype. There's lots of different ones, but the one that we chose was Zoom. And we quickly became pretty much a nationwide meeting. Usually we had about 20 to 30 in attendance, ranging from Australia to the United Kingdom and all of the Americas, the English-speaking Americas.
How was the decision, I guess, made then to start doing those online?
I think the decision then was that we wanted more. We knew that the world had more to offer as far as recovery, different ways that people work the 12 steps, what's it like in their local cultures, where they live. We knew that we had a lot to learn from one another. And Kentucky is a tough nut to crack. Kentucky has a very vast geography. It's flat in the west, the foothills are in the central, the mountains are in the south and the east. And people are segregated, not necessarily by color, but by geography. And Kentucky's always been that way. And we wanted those of us that were serving together in these different service bodies that span the whole state wanted to recover together in recovery meetings as well. And so we decided that we would try that and just see what happened. And it turned out that we had a lot of people in other places that wanted to try it with us.
So it sounds like since these online meetings had started, before the pandemic, that maybe it wasn't too big of a change, but I'm guessing that not being able to be in person and see other people that you're in recovery with, I imagine that was a really tough change.
Well, yeah, and I think there's two answers to that question. It was a huge change for Central Kentucky because, and let me give you a little bit of scope. In first week of March, let's say March 6th, 2020, there were over 76,000 weekly NA meetings globally in, a multitude of languages. Those stopped almost immediately in the next week. In Central Kentucky, we had one online meeting, but we had two. We had one here and we had one based out of Louisville. And we had both been meeting, like I said, for about a year. And what did happen, to kind of get to the second part of your question, is because the recovery community in NA had been exposed to online meetings, and they had maybe come once or twice. They had been to a couple of different events that we put on, special events where they could hear a speaker from some other part of the world. They had the basic understanding. And so within that next week, everybody was online. And I mean everyone. Central Kentucky, Southern Kentucky, Eastern Kentucky, Louisville area, Indiana, across the rivers from Louisville, down in Bowling Green, Western Kentucky, everybody was online within a week. And that was because we had spent a little bit of time, with some minimal training. It was a lot different for the rest of the world, and we spent the next month probably training people in on every continent how to get online, how to do the basic ins and outs of a normal NA recovery meeting that was relevant to their culture, because each culture might do it a little bit differently, their order of operations and things like that. It was a really interesting time. It was a very stressful time as well.
And then since then, have different chapters of NA continue to host those Zoom meetings. How popular, I guess, are those?
The communities are doing well, and they're doing better than any of us expected. And to give you an idea, we had what we would call a kind of a virtual service community of some of these virtual communities around the world came together to create a meeting list, and so that people could find one another for online meetings. And they created a website, virtual-na.org. I think that's been most difficult on our older population. The younger population are used to looking at screens. They're used to being on their phones. They're on social media. That's not the case for our members that are 50, 60, 70, 80 years old. And also being the portion of the population that is most vulnerable to catching COVID-19, I think it's been the hardest on them. And I've seen some really wonderful things, and then I've seen some really sad things. And the wonderful things being people that are open and willing to try something new, and the sad things being people that are not, and people who are still isolated even to this day. And they've chosen to stay isolated that way. That's been difficult to swallow.
So people who may have once shown up to meetings in person have just decided that maybe online meeting is not for them.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate, but you know what? They have that right to make that decision. And as someone who was a champion for online recovery, even after, you know, attending meetings for 13, 14 years in person, which I still do when I can, you know, I understand that everybody is not the same. They don't communicate the same. Their brains don't work the same. I get that. I was thinking about this earlier today. What was the last group of people that have been through in a change that's this abrupt, that's changed life so drastically? And the only couple things I could think of were are people that are still alive and experienced World War II. And maybe some of the people who remember things going on during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
What has the pandemic been like for you? And if you'd want to talk a little bit about maybe if it has impacted you personally, financially, emotionally, or in any other way.
Sure. Well, yeah, first it's all the above. It's impacted me personally, financially, and emotionally. You know, I am a small business owner, and being on unemployment for a while was difficult. And I won't go too far into all that. But, yeah, I mean, it affected me like it did everyone. Not being able to go to work was difficult, and work is sporadic for me right now because I'm a contractor. You know, personally and emotionally, it's had a huge impact on me. I'm a very social individual. You know, in NA, it's not uncommon for members to hug one another. That's kind of a cultural thing in our fellowship. That's a greeting that people are used to, and I haven't hugged, you know, many of my friends in a year. There's men that I've sponsored for over 10 years that I've had phone contact with, and that's it. We're not out watching the game. We're sports fans. You know, we go to games, go to UK games. I have two men that I sponsor that just live a couple blocks away from me. And we've been able to kind of see each other from a distance, and we talk a lot on the phone, but we used to go eat a lot and do all these other things, and that's hard. It's hard not seeing my family. My mother is very high risk, and that's been difficult. I have two children that are, they're basically grown. I mean, they were 2 and 4 when I got clean. I have daughters, and now I have one who is 20. She's a college basketball player at a local college, and I don't get to go see her games. I have to watch the game streaming, you know. And my youngest is who's a cheerleader, and sorry, like got a little emotional. Her senior year, you know, we had to walk her out on the field for the football season. It was difficult, you know, to be socially distanced and have my mom in a wheelchair with a mask on, and my fiance. It was a different experience than what we were used to, because her sister, you know, when her sister was a senior and volleyball and basketball, and we walked her out of the courts, you know, there was 10 people. this experience was much different, and this senior year has been much different. And it is what it is. You know, we persevere, but yeah, it's that'll affect you emotionally.
Do you think that people, and we've been talking a lot about how, you know, you just talked about how everyone's been impacted by the pandemic. It's been hard emotionally and financially. But do you think that people understand how the pandemic affects people in recovery?
I think that's a really interesting question, because I kind of think there's two levels to that. People in recovery, we're human beings like everyone else. So I do think that on some level, the general public can understand what it's like to all of a sudden be isolated from family, friends, coworkers, spiritual companions, if you are a member of a religious community or something like that. I think they can understand that. But for people in recovery, those kind of connections and that social interaction can also mean life and death. Meeting attendance is crucial to survival in recovery and in 12-step recovery. It's paramount, because it's where, you know, where we say the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. And so I don't know if everyone can understand that looking at it, if they haven't experienced it, that with the drugs that are available today to our communities, that one use can kill you. You know, that one bad decision to use one time can kill you. I don't know if the general public understand that it's that serious, and that it has to be that serious, because that one use can kill you.
And what do you think has been the hardest part about all of this for you?
Isolation has been the hardest part, undoubtedly. And what I mean by that is that there's a sharing process for us as humans and as people in recovery. You know, when we're in a physical space together, you know, we're able to pick up on one another's body language. We can tell, you know, how one another are doing just by looking at, you know, how we're interacting. And some of that gets lost online. Not all of it. Those are just the kind of things that I miss the most. Just the little short conversations I get to have with people. We're an entire society within the larger society. I mean, we recover in meetings together. Our families, you know, we've raised our families together. Our kids know one another. You know, we generally go to eat after meetings or coffee or other things. We socialize together, and all that's changed. And it was an abrupt change. It's a little bit easier to handle when it's gradual. We get a new, because this happens a lot to us when we grow and recover. We get a new job, or we start school. There's maybe buy a home in a new location. There's these things that happen that are kind of gradual changes. But when all of it changes at once, extremely difficult to handle. And we have lost some people. We've had people decide that they couldn't handle it and use, which is very sad. That's the hardest part, is accepting that that's life today, and there's nothing that I can do about it. I can try, and I can do all this stuff, but other people have to make the decisions that they want to stay clean, and they want to take the actions necessary to stay clean.
And then what has it been like participating and contributing to a recovery community? Has a lot of that been done online as well, like you said, through social media?
Yeah, and that's a great question, and there's a lot to unpack in it. So I want to address a couple of different things. Is that, you know, contributing to a recovery community from a service perspective, you know, we have NA members and we have NA groups. And so the groups are the primary place that we contribute. We share our personal recoveries together, but we have other services that local geographies, you know, provide. And, you know, multiple groups come together and they form an area. Multiple areas come together and they form a region, which might be a state or a half of a state. And so there is no getting together, right? These services that we used to provide in groups, you know, like going into a rehabilitation facility or going into a jail, are almost non-existent in person. A lot of that stuff we have started to do online. I want to tell a story about one of our new members, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
So the online meeting that I had talked to you about that we had formed a couple years ago, it had about 12 people coming to it consistently in March last year. And within 4 days of the governor's stay-home order, we were up to 400 people. because we were one of the first, and you know, the meeting just became huge. And so we had a guy who was in Tampa come to our meetings in Tampa, Florida, and he came to the meeting while he was in rehab on his phone. They let him do it, and then he came for a couple of weeks before he got released. And when he was released, he went back to his home. Everybody was still in lockdown, and he kept coming to the meeting every day. And then now he's got a home here. He contributes the same way he would as if he were going to in-person meetings where he lives. He would go to the meeting. He's got other friends that go to his meeting that he sees all the time. Virtually, he gets to go to facilities and talk to people about NA, and he gets a chance to be a part of all kind of stuff. Like, we've got a guy who got out of treatment. He's from South Florida, and he's never been to an NA meeting in person. He's a truck driver. We were one of the first meetings he found. He's become a member now, and he's sponsored by the man who's in Oklahoma. He found his sponsor with us, and he's actually driven to meet his sponsor because he's been on that part of the country. I mean, this time in our life is full of stories like that that just never would have happened if we kind of had no other choice but to come together the way that we had. It's been difficult, but it's not been all bad.